This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Show number three of Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. What better way to start than taking a look at the Stanley Cup Final with this man on the Progressive Guest Line, as we've got Jonathan Davis aboard. He does a tremendous job here at the network, taking a look at all things hockey. He does some great work on SiriusXM as well. And Jonathan, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Greg, no place I'd rather be on Saturday night than to be here with you on Cashing Out.
Absolutely, and in some places it's actually very early Sunday morning as well, so that's always a lot of fun. And Jonathan, we've got ourselves a tremendous final all set up. It's the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. Where have we seen this one before? But that said, for Edmonton, hoping for a little bit of a different result this season, as right now for Edmonton, if you're looking at game number one, they're going to be hosting it as about -120, -125 favorites. How do you take a look at game number one specifically before we go a little bit more broad on the series?
Well, you know, I'm probably going to go with the trend that's been a big cash for me, you know, for 11 straight games and 20 of the last 22. And that's, I'm going to play both teams on the puck line at -1.5. So the favorite Edmonton at -1.5, and come back with Florida on the reverse puck line at -1.5. And as I was saying, 11 straight playoff games have been decided by two goals or more in 20 of the last 22. So until I see a reason to stop, you know, you're going to come away with some plus money. And, you know, I've learned from the best, learned from the best about hedging here. And Derek Stevens is one guy that never will turn down hedging and making a profit. So, hey, that's the way I'm going to stick with things right now. As we get closer to the game, I'll look at some individual player props. But for now, that would be the way I would approach things.
I think that that's a good approach, and this is just going to be a series in general that I think is so interesting, because you've got the familiarity factor on both sides, because they both have been on the ultimate stage. They both were here last year. And how much do you play what we saw last year into the handicap for this season and take a look at both of these teams in terms of trying to make adjustments from it?
Well, I think for Edmonton, you know, you listen to the Oilers, and especially Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you know, after they eliminated the Dallas Stars, it was a much different reaction to from a year ago, where they were, you know, just ecstatic about making the final. This time it's like, we've been there already. We know what it's all about. And it's very much a business approach. And so I think, you know, Edmonton definitely took some lessons from, you know, where they were a year ago. You know, the balance for Edmonton has been very good throughout the playoffs. You know, look, they've got 19 different players that have scored. I think it's 21 different players for Edmonton with a point. Florida's got similar numbers as well. But the difference for Edmonton, Greg, is that, you know, they've got 7 or 10 guys, I think, with at least 7 goals or more in the playoffs. They're not relying solely on Connor McDavid, who, you know, finished with over 40 points last year. They're much more balanced. This year, Connor and Leon have accounted for about 18% of the goals. Last year, it was, I think, in the high 30s.
I do think that that's something to be diving in on, and I think that what is going to be really interesting in this as well is the goaltending, because obviously when it comes down to a playoff hockey, it's all about who has that hot goaltender. And Stuart Skinner, he has really surprised me here in the playoffs. He had like one bad game in that series against Dallas, but other than that, he has been rock solid. How do you take a look at this aspect of things? Because I don't know if Stuart Skinner is going to be able to keep it up. And for Sergei Bobrovsky, he's been pretty much the hallmark of consistency over the last few postseasons.
He has, but you know, look, people keep doubting Stuart Skinner. And if you take a look, his goals against average in their wins this year, it's been a microscopic. I think he's at about 0.50 goals in the wins. Yeah, look, he struggled in the first two games against LA. And, you know, he struggled, I think, in one of the games against Vegas. But he's got, what, 4 shutouts in the playoffs? He's had a game where he's given up 1 goal. And then, yeah, look, the Dallas game, he gave up 3, but he didn't give up the 4th. In the case of Sergei Bobrovsky, look, the numbers on him, you know, he's been really good since game 3 against Toronto. I don't think there's a big advantage just from the way Stuart Skinner plays, especially games 4 through 7, Greg. I think he's now, 14-1 when we get to game 4 and beyond in a playoff series dating back to last year. And that one loss was to Florida in game 7. So look, Bobrovsky's the sexier name. He's got his name on the cup, but Stuart Skinner has been no slouch. So I can't say I'm giving a prohibitive advantage to Florida just because of the way Stuart Skinner has played.
And what else I think is very interesting about this series, too, is if you go back to the previous series for the Edmonton Oilers, they actually dropped game one against the Dallas Stars. They did not look good at all in that game number one. And then they go back, they're able to take all four games. And I know that a lot of people want to focus on game one. How much do you think that game one is going to be pivotal in terms of deciding this series? Or do you think that perhaps we might see something similar to what we saw from the Oilers in the previous series against the Stars, where if they drop game one, they're still fine?
Well, look, the big thing in game one, you know, really, at the end of the day, we had 15 periods of hockey, and the Dallas Stars maybe won three periods. So that's the equivalent to one game. That was one of those three periods being the third period of game number one when Edmonton couldn't keep themselves out of the penalty box. It's, look, the recipe is very simple for Edmonton. Stay disciplined. But look, both Edmonton and Florida are very similar in their approach. They both want to extract a pound of flesh from you every time they hit you, Greg. Specifically when it comes to game one, look, here's another approach I'm taking. I do like the Oilers to win this series. I think they get their revenge on Florida. So the other way I'm also going to play this is I will play Edmonton to win game one and to win the series. You get that at about plus 170. I'll also come back with Florida to win game one and Edmonton to win the series. And that's, I think, about plus 420. So I'm not so concerned about game number one and if Edmonton loses. I just think that they're a much more mature team. They will miss Zach Hyman, who's been the playoff hits leader. But you just watch the way this team has grown as they move throughout the playoffs. I mean, Greg, they're 12-2 since losing to the first two games to L.A. 11 of those games, they were missing their best defenseman, Matthias Ekholm, who returned for the final game against Dallas. I really like where the Oilers are at.
Yep, the Oilers were able to look so strong in the final four games against the Dallas Stars, as we do have Jonathan Davis, who does amazing work here at the network, joining me on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And I think that the total is very intriguing as well. Most places are hanging at six, seeing a few 6.5 out there as well. And for the Florida Panthers, they have been dominant with regards to their goal scoring. They have put up 5+ goals in now 5 out of their last 6 games. How do you take a look at this total? Because I mentioned the goaltending, and I know you said that you were feeling like the goaltending advantage for the Florida Panthers is a little bit less pronounced than a lot of people would indicate, but what has been very much standing out to me is the way the Florida has just been able to score at will here in these last few games.
Yeah, and that's fair. They were able to, you know, to really beat down the Carolina Hurricanes defense, which was missing two of their top six defensemen. I would lean to the over six. I mean, definitely shop around six better than 6.5, but I found that, you know, especially in that first game after a long layoff, teams can tend to be a little sloppy. Scoring chances can become a little more, can become greater. So I would lean over six in game one.
Yeah, but I think that that's a relatively good lean as well, because we have seen for the Edmonton Oilers, they're a team that is able to get really going as well. And how much do you take a look at what we have seen in terms of a trend here in the postseason as well? And I know that Scott Seidenberg is mentioning it. I know that you've been mentioning it. The team that wins has been able to win by multiple goals. I believe that's more than 2/3 of the games thus far in the postseason have been decided by multiple goals. Do you think that because now it's a cup final that this might dry up a little bit, or is that still an approach that is worth taking?
Look, Greg, I thought the trend was going to slow down in round three as we're getting closer to the final. But like I said to you off the top, I can't back away from, you know, 11 straight, 20 or 22. And, yeah, I think we're at about 55 of 78 games overall in the playoffs that have been decided by two. I mean, up until one of the games in Carolina, we actually had, at one point, I think, had 9 straight games that were decided by 3 goals or more. In fact, the Dallas Stars lost all 9 of their games in the playoffs by 3 goals or more. So, look, you know, as we say, trends are our friends until they're not. So I will continue to, you know, to look at, you know, that you know, teams, both teams to win in the puck line. I would also tend to look at teams, you know, I would, if you can't pre-flop, I would look at that third period over 1.5, or if you want to get a better price at over 2, BetMGM offers the flat 2. I would look at that because, you know, empty net goals tend to be a little more prevalent, I find, in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And you were mentioning the over of six as well. That could be the what decides whether or not this goes over or under as well, because you have yourself like a 3-2 game. You get one empty net goal. You perhaps get yourself a second empty net goal as well. So I think that that's well said. And about 90 seconds remaining, anything that you're taking a look at in terms of the Conn Smythe Trophy as well, because this is an interesting market. And as we know, it's the folks themselves that are casting their ballots. It's not necessarily based on analytics or anything like that. And I do think that's just so interesting with this being a rematch of what we saw from last season and how that might play into the voting.
Well, okay, one thing I will say is that if the Edmonton Oilers lose again in the Cup Final, Connor McDavid's not winning back-to-back Hart trophies. It's been done a couple of times in the playoffs that we've seen. You know, if he does win, if the Oilers win right now, Connor, you know, right now he's at about even money to win the Conn Smythe. I've got Leon Draisaitl at 15-1. I still like him at +850. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins would be, a good long shot at 180-1. On the Florida side, I've got Bobrovsky at 850. He's down to +250. Anytime you can, you know, make twice as, you know, double up on your money, I still like it. But from a value standpoint, Sam Bennett, who leads the Panthers in goals right now with 10, leads the playoffs in goals with 10, 39-1. I have some money on Sam Bennett.
I said that immediately when this Cup Final had gotten started. I was like, wow, Sam Bennett seems like he's not getting the respect that he deserves. I feel like you understand that he shouldn't be the favorite, but I like that look. Jonathan, you do such a great job on the hockey front. Always appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me, Greg. Have a great rest of your night.
Always great to have Jonathan aboard. And coming up next, we go from the ice to the diamond to take a look at some Sunday baseball and cashing out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Here on Cash It Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be joined by Jonathan Davis, who does such an amazing job here at the network, taking a look at this great sport of hockey. Stanley Cup playoffs gets going June 4th. It's going to be a good one. Jonathan, he has been amazing on the ice all season long. So big thanks to Jonathan for joining me in the last segment. I personally don't do a ton with regards to hockey, so don't have as much of a take with regards to the Stanley Cup Final. I do a lot more baseball, and I've got a lot of thoughts with regards to the slate that we've got coming up here for this Sunday. If you're looking for my write-ups I do for VSiN every single day, the write-ups I've got for Sunday, they are currently up and at them, so we've got you guys all covered there. And one of the games I did write up is this one out there in Miami. This is 9-5, 9-6 on the card. The San Francisco Giants, they throw they're facing off against the Miami Marlins. As Ryan Weathers is looking to weather the storm for Miami, and you got Hayden Birdsong on the bump for San Francisco and the Giants. Right around about a -125 to a -130 favorite. That neighborhood about +110, +116 is your number on Miami. And right now that total is 8. Starting to go downward a little bit more. I did set my total a little bit closer to an 8.4. I like the over. And you've got a Miami team that has just played so many of their games to the over the last few seasons when they've been at home. As a matter of fact, for Miami, north of 62% of their home games since the beginning of the 2024 season have gone over the total. And I think that Ryan Weathers is going to be able to give you a good performance. Now, for Ryan Weathers, a little bit of regression is probably due in for him. He's got a microscopic 1.15 ERA over his first three starts, and he's given up as many home runs as he has earned runs, too. So, yeah, I do think that that's going to start to dry up a little bit, but he's getting about 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's not giving up a lot of walks, 2.3 walks per 9 innings. And Hayden Birdsong, he does have a fielding independent that's more than a point higher than his ERA, which is right now at 2.48. His strikeout stuff is supreme. He's been able to give you north of 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. But in a case where the walks are contact, does catch up with him a little bit. And out of his 13 appearances this year, 11 have come out of the bullpen. But by trade, he's a starter last season. He was primarily a starter, so should be able to still give you some good length here. But that said, with regards to this San Francisco Giants team, big reason why I backed them on the money line. And personally, I set my money line price at a -154. So I think that you got great value here. This bullpen has been supreme. And the Miami Marlins bullpen has not been. For the San Francisco Giants, they entered in the day on Saturday with a 243 bullpen ERA. No other team in baseball had better than a 290 bullpen ERA. And for the Miami Marlins right now, that's a nice hearty 471. That is outside the top 25 in all baseball. As you've got Anthony Bender has been pretty solid in this Miami Marlins bullpen. But I mean, other than that, you've had Kelvin Fauché give up well north of a 4 ERA. Jesus Tinoco has been getting Tinoco'd around. It has not been tremendous there. George Soriano is a little bit of a long guy. Has just been a complete disaster. They had to send him down to the minor league level because he wasn't cutting it. And they haven't really found anyone other than Ronnie Enriquez who's able to give you some nice long relief. And for the Miami Marlins, you've gotten quite a bit of production out of Kyle Sowers. Has been a little bit in and out of the lineup over the last few days. I don't know if he's dealing with a little bit of an ailment or what, but he's been able to supply the team with about a 360 on base, supplying the team with 10 home runs. Good news is Dane Meyers is now back for this team. He's been able to give you north of a 300 average, and you've got a pair of guys in Matt Mervis and Augustin Ramirez who've been able to supply 7 home runs apiece, but Mervis is hitting a .175. He has just been not great for the team. Getting back Connor Norby should be able to help out as well, but for the San Francisco Giants, even though this isn't necessarily a team that's going to be like number one in all of baseball in terms of run production or anything like that, they've been a rock solid road offensive team, and I think that that's something that you do want to take a look at, because with regards to the San Francisco Giants team, they play in one of the more pitcher friendly ballparks that you're going to find in all of baseball. They've got some pretty demonstrative home and road splits with regards to that offense. Now this year it's been pretty much on point. They've been averaging about 4.3 runs per game both at home and away from home, but I do think that as the season goes along, that is going to, shall we say, shift a little bit more to them being a little bit more of a productive team on the road. But Willy Adames, you need to get a little bit more out of him. Hitting just a .207 with 5 home runs. That's not what they signed him for, but you've got Eloy Ramos, Wilmer Flores, Matt Chapman, all with 10 home runs this far this season. Chapman doesn't hit for a lot of average, but it's playing a .360 on base. Ramos has been able to right around about a .290. Lamont Wade Jr. has been a bit of a disappointment, but Mike Yastrzemski has made up for that with his right around about .345 on base. And I do think that in this spot for Ryan Weathers, he starts to experience that regression. Love the way that the Giants are able to pitch in that bullpen, and I think that that gets the job done for them. So I'm going to be willing to lay the money line of the Giants, willing to go up to -154 there. And then I do like this total over as well. What else I love is the fact that Edge Boost, they're making sure that bettors are able to have access to their funds for all gambling-related transactions at all hours of the day. There's no usage fees, no minimums. You're able to earn cashback rewards, 100% approval on all of these betting deposits. And when you go to EdgeBoost.bet, utilize that promo code of CASH, C-A-S-H. That allows you to, with your first $25 deposit, get that deposit match. That's over at EdgeBoost.bet, promo code of CASH, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we do dive in on this game, because we saw a very fascinating game between the Washington Nationals and the Arizona Diamondbacks on Saturday. The Washington Nationals actually got up 11-0 in the first two innings. Diamondbacks made it interesting. They lose by a count of 11-7 because they were down 4 runs in the ninth inning. They weren't able to throw a position player, so they had to use up their full allotment of bullpen pieces. And for the Washington Nationals, if we can get this plus number up just a little bit more, might be willing to consider it. This is 909-910 on the card, as it is Corbin Burns going for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Mitchell Parker is going for Washington, and Washington is right around about a +195 to a +205 underdog, and between -230 to a -238, that number on the Diamondbacks. Now, if you're looking to lay a run half with the Saints, you're going to be getting that anywhere between about a -110 to a -115, and if I had to play anything right now, I would probably be looking to play a run line of the Arizona Diamondbacks, but again, I'm hoping that I could get more like a +215 or so with regards to this Washington Nationals money line. Now, I recognize that Mitchell Parker has been not great recently, to say the least. How about 3-plus runs allowed in 5 out of his last 6 starts? Been getting banged around like a pinata. He doesn't give you a lot of swings and misses. He's down below 6.5 strikeouts for 9 innings, and all of a sudden has been giving up a little bit more hard contact in these last few starts. But for Corbin Burns, it's not like he's been vintage Corbin Burns this season. Right around 4 walks per 9 innings, which I still remember when he was with the Brewers. He had that historic streak of like no walks for over like 20 or so innings to begin the season. He was absolutely incredible with regards to that command. .272 ERA, but more of a .410 fielding independent. Not giving up a ton of hard contact, about 1.1 home runs per 9 innings. But the strikeout stuff, not necessarily where it has been throughout much of his career, getting about 8.6 strikeouts per 9 innings. And he's backed up by a bullpen that has been very shaky for the Diamondbacks. Again, they weren't able to utilize a position player, so they had to go through all their bullpen pieces, as they got a grand total of 27 outs on the bullpen on Saturday, because Brandon Pfaadt did not get a single out. Not even kidding. He gave up 8 runs, and that was just absolutely insane. And it's so alarming that the alarm is going off. So that's interesting, to say the least. But you know what? 8 runs given up, no outs for Brandon Faught. So that was interesting. And you've got on the flip side a Washington Nationals team that they've been able to do a relatively solid job with regards to this offense. James Wood has been able to give you good wood. He's been able to supply you with 16 home runs thus far this season. C.J. Abrams, he's been moving the line. He's been hitting about a 275. Luis Garcia, not necessarily going to give you a ton of power, but he's been able to move the line. You've got Keibert Ruiz as well, who's been rock solid for this team. And for the Washington Nationals, the big trepidation that you've got is this bullpen. Like, I mean, you want something that's really alarming. How about a bullpen ERA that's hovering right around about 6? So you've been trying to mix and match with this team. They had, like, Lucas Sims go completely just haywire, north of 10 ERA. They had to let him go. And it's been survival of the fittest with regards to this Washington Nationals bullpen. If you get outs, somehow, some way, you stay around. If you don't get outs, well, you're going to be let go. Like our good friend of Lucas Sims, Jackson Rutledge has been a little bit hit or miss. He's hovering right around about a 4 ERA. Jose Ferrer, they need to get a little bit more off him, but they found a few okay guys. Kyle Finnegan was even full of a little bit of an injury, but they've been able to get more something out of him. Cole Henry has been able to give you an ERA that's been hovering right around about 3 as well, so that's been helpful for the team. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, if you date it back to the beginning of the 2024 season, top 3 team with regards to their overall run production. This despite the fact that you've had a little bit of a hit or miss sort of season out of Lourdes Gurriel. Getting back, Ketel Marte has been big. He's been able to give you right around about a 400 on base. Josh Naylor, Pavin Smith, pair of guys that are doing a nice job moving the line. And then you've got Geraldo Perdomo, who's been able to give you 400 on base. Would like to see a little bit more, shall we say, consistency out of Eugenio Suarez, but he, along Corbin Carroll, 14-plus home runs apiece. So, interesting spot here. Like I said, if we can get, like, closer to about a plus 213 or so, would like the Nationals on the money line right now, seeing that right around about a plus 205. And then with regards to Soto, semi-total at a 9.4. So, I'm going to be willing to go in on the over. We'll start this one off, and then we'll finish it up on the flip side, as we've got 913, 914 on the card. We got the Chicago White Sox on the road against the Baltimore Orioles. Charlie Morton is on the bump for Baltimore, and Adrian, don't call him Doogie Howser, is on the bump for the White Sox. White Sox right now find themselves as anywhere between a plus 140 to a plus 150 underdog. Meanwhile, about minus 160 to a minus 170 is that number on Baltimore. Total on this game is 9, shaded up a little bit to the over. Now, I did set my total at 9.2. The White Sox have not necessarily been producing a lot of offense on the road, but do think that they should get a little bit more going off of Charlie Morton, but I think that Adrian Howser sees a little bit of regression, and I'll tell you why on the flip side right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got ourselves a lot of great baseball to be able to take a look at for this Sunday, and we left off touching upon the White Sox and the Orioles game. And right now with the Baltimore Orioles, you are getting them as a pretty good size favorite, anywhere between about minus 160 to minus 170. That neighborhood about plus 140, plus 150 on the White Sox, and the total of 9 with the over juice up a little bit more. And I'm going to be willing to go in on the over in this ordeal. You've got a guy in Adrian Howser, by the way, that I don't know where this has come from, but he has had 2 starts for the Chicago White Sox, and he was pitching earlier in the season over at AAA Round Rock, and I'm someone from the great state of Wisconsin. I grew up on Brewers baseball, so I know all too well about this man named Adrian Howser. Spent a little bit hit or miss throughout his career, but I mean, he's had these 2 really good starts, but I just feel like it's a little bit of a flash in the pan. Hasn't necessarily been able to give you a lot of swing and miss. He's only getting about 6 strikeouts per 9 innings, and he's been giving up 3 walks per 9, and you look at his entire career, more like 7 strikeouts at 3.5 walks per 9 innings, so has never really been anything impressive there. He's very much based around being able to get soft contact, and when he was over at AAA Round Rock, he was able to do that. That was the minor league affiliate with the Texas Rangers that he was at prior to the White Sox signing him, but I mean, even at Round Rock, he had a 5 ERA. Now, that's out there in the PCL, not necessarily an end-all be-all, because the PCL is a little bit of juice ball league. These places like Sacramento and Albuquerque, they are very difficult places to be able to pitch at, but I do think that for Baltimore, you're also going to see this offense get a little bit more online as well. Now, it's not quite to the extreme of the struggles of the Texas Rangers in terms of this Baltimore Orioles offense, but the Orioles have just left a lot to be desired at the plate, and you just have had a few guys in general that, for lack of a better term, you just expect more out of them, and they haven't been able to give you that. Hessen Kjerstad, along with let's throw in there as well Adley Rutschman for sure, Dylan Carlson. These guys hitting a 215 or lower just have not been able to give you what you need, and it's not even like they're giving you supreme power. Now, you bet Ryan Mountcastle hit for a little bit better average. He's up to a 246, but a 280 on base with two home runs. You just need to be getting a little bit more there. And outside of Cedric Mullins, nobody's been able to give you north of 9 home runs as far this season. Ryan Ehr has been able to give you that 400 base, 9 home runs. But for Mullins, he's currently on the injured list. That hurts this offense a little bit. But do you think that it's something like a Roman Urias? Whenever he gets opportunities, he's going to be able to give you a bit of something, something. He's been able to find a way on base. But you also have a Chicago White Sox team that, along with Adrian Houser, being doing for a little bit of regression, this has been one of the worst bullpens out there in all of baseball. And I think that that allows them to be able to knife through, be able to get a few runs up on the board, as this is a White Sox team that has actually had Mike Vasil be a really good long reliever for them. I'll give a little bit of credit where it is due. He's got a ERA that's hovering right around about a 2, but likes of Brandon Iser, Jared Schuster, they've now got Bryce Wilson back in the bullpen after he got a few starts, north of 5 ERAs out of all those guys. And then on the flip side, it's a White Sox lineup that, yeah, they've been in the bottom three in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, but you know what a good elixir to that is? The 7.07 ERA of Charlie Morton, who's given up 5 walks per 9 innings, hovering right around about 2 bombs per 9. He has not been good as a starter. He has not been good as a reliever. He's not been good at home. He's not been good on the road. And you do have Miguel Vargas, who's now been able to supply this White Sox team with 8 home runs, and you've had Lennon Sosa do a nice job being able to move the line, hitting for about a 280. Now, it's really concerning. You got Luis Robert and Andrew Vaughn, both hitting between a 180 to a 190. And for Andrew Vaughn, a 218 on base. It's like, man, trying to draw your walks here, buddy, as both of these guys, 5 home runs this far this season. And it's so bad for Andrew Vaughn, if they haven't already. I think that they actually were rumors that they're going to be sending him down to the minor league. So, I mean, that's not great to say the least. And you're probably going to be mixing and matching with someone like Joshua Palacios, Michael A. Taylor, to be able to give you a little bit more. These guys are hitting below a 220. Good news is they've gotten Andrew Benintendi off the injured list. He's been able to give you about a 315 on base. But also have a Baltimore Orioles team that I talked about, the less than tremendous bullpen pitching of the Chicago White Sox. For the Orioles, they find themselves in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA as well. You've got Felix Bautista, who got used up on Saturday as well, so that hurts the team a little bit. Yennier Cano just has not been himself this year, well north of a 4 ERA, and then you've been trying to mix and match with some of these other guys in the bullpen. Charlie Morton was one of those guys that they were trying to. Cionel Perez rocking a well north of 8 ERA. They had to DFA him after he was just an abject disaster, and they're having survival of the fittest in the bullpen as well. If you're able to get out, you're staying with the team. If not, sorry, Cionel Perez. And if you guys heard Anthony Dominguez struggle, Gregory Soto has struggled. So I do think that you're going to get a little bit of higher scoring game. Did make my total 9.2. I like the over, but I do think that the Orioles, they get to Adrian Houser, they get to that bullpen. So I'm going to be looking at them on the run line as well and take a plus 120 or higher, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And now is that last chance to be able to dive in on a tremendous offer that we're having here at VSiN. You're able to get VSiN Pro for less than 50 cents a day for 14 months. Typically, we charge $20 a month for the subscription, so that's $240 a year. We knock that down by $41, throw in there an extra 2 months because we love you. This gives you a daily best bet email from all of our VSiN shows and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 live video and replays on the VSiN Watch app, and so much more, plus a 2025-2026 NFL betting guide that is going to be dropping this summer as well to get you all set for the football season. You want to head on over to VSiN.com/pro or VSiN.com/subscribe and type in that promo code of PRO, P-R-O. That saves you $41 and that gets you 2 months for free on everything that we do here at the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we take a look at this early game? Because one of the biggest takeaways I had from baseball on Saturday is the Cy Young race in the National League was very much altered. And it was very much altered by the fact that our good friend in Jesus Luzardo, who I bet quite a bit this year, I very much liked him, and I honestly thought that there was a little bit of value on him to perhaps be able to win Cy Young. I don't think that there's any of that anymore after he gave up 12, got him 12. 12 runs to the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, the Philadelphia Phillies just left the guy out there to die. I mean, poor Asu Cesarno, who's been doing such a great job this year, clearly just did not have it on this day, and they decided, yep, you're going to wear it, buddy. And for Asu Cesarno, if you're looking at his Cy Young, shall we say, odds, they're now at 28-1, and yeah, he's now got a 3.52 ERA. He was getting good swing and miss stuff. He sort of had a chance to be able to have some upside in that race. I'm not really seeing it anymore, but I do think that there's a little bit of upside with regards to getting some runs in this game, as well as you got yourself 9-1, 9-2 on the card. It is the Brewers with Jose Quintana going on the bump for them, and Mr. Ranger Suarez goes for the Phillies. Most places have flipped from an 8 to an 8.5. The opener was 8. Now we're seeing a lot of 8.5s on the board, and for the Brewers, they're anywhere between +150 to +160 underdogs, -170 to -180 is that number on the Phillies. Personally, I was able to get an 8 over, but even if you have an 8.5, I do like that number. Anything below a 9, I'd be willing to take a shot here, because for Jose Quintana, while he's got a pretty low ERA, he's rocking at 2.65 ERA, he doesn't get a lot of swings and misses, he's only getting about 6 strikeouts per 9 innings, 2.9 walks allowed per 9, 1.3 home runs per 9, feels like he's sort of been, for lack of a better term, walking on sunshine, and I don't know how long lasting that's going to be. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, I do think that the lineup is going to start to get home runs out of guys not named Kyle Schwarber. Now, you're probably going to be without Bryce Harper once again in this one. He has been missing for the last week or so ever since he took a ball off the elbow, so be mindful of that. But I am for Schwarber. 19 home runs, nearly a 400 base. He's been rock solid. And for pretty much the rest of the Phillies lineup, they've been moving the line, but they haven't necessarily been able to bust through with regards to that power. Prior to going and getting injured, you had Bryce Harper supplying 8 home runs, and really nobody else on the team with north of 6 bombs, as you got Max Kepler, Trey Turner, Nick Castellanos, JT Realmuto, all between 5 and 6 home runs, and Turner's hitting a 300. Alec Bohm, who had a miserable start to the season, he's backed up to 5 bombs. He's hitting a 270. You've had Nick Castellanos hit for about a 285 as well. And then you've had, in a small sample size, Amando Sosa be able to turn near a 300 for the team as well. But I do think that for the Philadelphia Phillies, they are set as a little bit too lofty a favorite, because I do think that Ranger Suarez is going to start to experience a little bit of strife. He's been posting up about a 297 ERA. Swing and miss stuff has actually been a little bit up this year. He has given you about 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. The walks have been not bad, not amazing. He's been able to induce some soft contact, but he's had his issues at home. Issuing at home, a 5.40 ERA, has yet to give up an earned run on the road this far this season. And with the Philadelphia Phillies, they back come up with a bullpen that's currently in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of their overall bullpen ERA. And Jose Alvarado was really their best reliever. He decided to take weight loss supplements and said he's going to be losing weight in his pocketbook, because he is suspended for 80 games. That's not necessarily great. You've got Orion Kerkering, who's been able to round into form recently, though. Sub-3.5 ERA out of him. You've had Matt Strom really start to regress. He and Tanner Banks offering right around about a 3.80 ERA, but then you're trying to mix and match with someone like Jordan Romano, who's been absolutely terrible. Carlos Hernandez has been absolutely terrible. These guys have just not given you a lot there. And for the Brewers, they are outside the top 20 with regards to bullpen ERA as well. It's been a rough run of things for Elvis Piguero, Yoel Pyons, a pair of guys that were so good for them last year, and both of those guys dealt with injuries. In the case of Elvis Piguero, I think they got DFA'd, so that's not great. But if you had Jared Koenig be able to pick it up a little bit more, Trevor McGill, Evander Uribe, these guys have been able to give you sub-2.5 ERA. I do think that the Brewers will have a lot of guys that are doing a nice job moving the line, like Sal Frelick and company. They do just enough to get to Ranger Suarez to get the job down here. We'll take a +155 money line on the Brewers, and I do like this total over as well. I did set my total at an 8.7, and to wrap up the show, I'm going to give you guys what I like on the diamond on Sunday. On the flip side, here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here for the final segment of the night, right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. If you're listening live to Cashing Out, well, You're going to be getting a replay of this fine program. Meanwhile, if you're listening to the replay, we've got a tremendous slate coming up for you on Sunday. I'll actually be in on live bets Sunday, so you guys are going to be getting a nice dose of myself in the evening hours. We're going to have the VSiN morning line starting up at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern, as I know that our guy Tim Murray does a tremendous job there. And then you got Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown, Mike Somich. So you're in for a really good Sunday, and now my objective is clear. Get you to Sunday nice, clean, and easy. Try to make you guys a little bit of money along the way, and we'll give you guys all that I'm taking a look at with regards to baseball front. First things first, though, we did have the NBA Finals get all set up, as it is going to be the OKC Thunder going against the Indiana Pacers. This is going to be getting started up on Thursday. I don't have any sort of an exacta. Like, if I were to play anything, I would look at the OKC Thunder getting it done in six games, but I am not going to encourage you to lay the minus $650 minus $7 in terms of series price on the OKC Thunder. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to win finals MVP at minus $6. Just a little bit too pricey there. If I'm looking at anything in terms of game one, I'm looking at that under of 230.5. I think that it's going to be a little bit more of a feel mile process, and I do think that it's a little bit correlated. I do think that if the OKC Thunder are able to win and cover, the game goes under. I think that if the Pacers either win the game outright or cover, it's going to be a little bit more of an over game. So that's the way that I take a look at it, but I'm much more of an in-game bettor with regards to the NBA, so we'll be parsing through that when the time comes, and the time has come to take a look at what we've all got on this baseball Sunday, as I've got my write-ups up on the website over at VSiN.com, which you're able to get them daily as a VSiN Pro subscriber, and you're able to get this tremendous offer as well, courtesy of VSiN. We've got the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet along with VSiN. All you need to do is open up a GBank Visa signature card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger this $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank signature Visa credit card. First Bet is going to be offering a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through August 31st. That's a $200 value. So that gets you a $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bank, and First Bet and VSiN. Head on over to VSiN.com/GBank. That is VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion that is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer. This will not apply to requests to converting existing accounts. You want to apply today. In terms and conditions, they do apply. Now let's take a look at what we've all got on this baseball Sunday, and we'll lead it off with this. And if you listen in on our number one, I told you exactly what I feel about the Colorado Rockies. Again, I'm gonna give you this stat, and it's gonna blow your mind. Yeah, Colorado Rockies are 3-27 on the road this year. What that means is that you would need to be getting on the money line in Rockies road games plus $9 for them to break even. Not even a profit. To break even, you would need plus $9. Like, my gosh. This is just absolutely terrible. And right now, with the New York Mets on the money line, it's minus 390. I get it. You're not Jones or DeLay minus 390 on a money line. It's baseball. Like, I mean, any team should be able to win on any given day. The stink of the Colorado Rockies is just that bad. Like, I used to be a sucker for these teams that would be like plus $3 thinking, oh, it's baseball. You know what? A bloop and a blast. It could happen. For the Colorado Rockies, unfortunately, there's no such thing as a bloop and a blast for them because they average 2.3 runs per game away from home, and as a collective, they're hitting below the Mendoza of 200. A skid mark on the underpants of baseball, as I've been saying the last few weeks, and it's oh so true. Like, this is a level of stink that's beyond stink right now. And you've got Carson Palmquist, who's on the bump. He's been rocking about a 9 ERA. For Palmquist, he actually gives you a little bit of swing and miss, but has absolutely no control whatsoever. You've got a Colorado Rockies team that just can't have anyone moving the line whatsoever. And for the Mets, Clay Holmes has been pretty solid for them. He's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. His fielding dependence is a little bit higher than this, but 8.5 strikeouts to 3.5 walks per 9 innings. And this is a body clock game for the Colorado Rockies as well. Having to go from the mountainous time zone on over to the East Coast and having to play this game early, I mean, that makes it all the worse. Now, personally, I'm going to be taking a look at the run line here, which that's still a high number. That's about minus 180 to minus 185. But again, value is value. when you got a team that's winning quite literally 15% of their games, they should be priced out as if they are like minus 550 favorites here, and they are not. So, yeah, with this Mets team, I'm going to be looking to play that run line. I did set my total at an 8.1. At the 8.5, I actually like the under just because I don't think that the Rockies do their part with regards to the total. This is one that I wrote up as well. You've got the Cincinnati Reds and the Chicago Cubs. Jameson Taillon is going to be on the bump for the Cubs. Nick Martinez goes for the Cincinnati Reds. Total on this game is 7.5. Juice up a little bit to the over. I recognize that the wind is going to be blowing in just a scotch over at Wrigley Field on this day, but I do like the over. Jameson Taillon getting very much hit hard, giving up 2.1 home runs for 9 innings. But Nick Martinez, he's been posting up about a 3.65 ERA. Feeling dependent is on par with that. He's not giving up a lot of hard contact, but he gives up a lot of general contact with about 6.5 strikeouts for 9 innings. You got a Cubs team that is right now averaging 5.8 runs per game. That leads the big leagues. And for the Reds, this has been a little bit of shaky bullpen for them over the last few weeks. We saw Graham Ashcraft blow that game on Saturday. It's been a case where it's been a little bit hit or miss with regards to Emilio Pagan as well. So I do like the Cubs on the run line, actually. I was willing to lay a run F, get that plus number, and I'm going to be taking a look at the over as well. And then this is another game that I wrote up, and this is one that I've yet to break down. We've got ourselves the Angels and the Cleveland Guardians. This is 9-17, 9-18 on the card. Kevin Williams goes for Cleveland. Jack Conowitz goes for the Angels, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And for Conowitz, about a plus 140 to a plus 155 underdog for the Angels. You're finding that Cleveland Guardians money line at about minus 164 to minus 170. And if you're looking at the run line of Cleveland, you're going to be getting that in the neighborhood of plus 125. And I would need at the very minimum a plus 120 to be able to take a shot here. Personally, I lean towards that plus 125 run line of Cleveland. But that said, what I really like here is the over. Jack Conowitz just instills no confidence in me whatsoever. 6 strikeouts, a 4.3 walks per 9 innings, allowing 1.3 home runs per 9 innings. And for Conowitz, it's not just that he's bad. This is an Angels bullpen that has just been absolutely awful. Dead last in the big leagues with north of a 6 ERA, and they've had to mix and match in that bullpen as well. They have DFA'd a few guys and hasn't done a lot of good. They're looking at guys like Robert Stevenson, who didn't pitch at the big league level at all last season, to start to give them some innings. They're looking to guys like a Brock and Roll Burke, who's been giving in north of 5 ERA. Ryan Zephyrian was the only guy that had thrown north of 6 innings in the bullpen that had a sub-5 ERA entering into Saturday, and then he pooped the bed. So now everyone who has thrown at least 6 innings in this Angels bullpen, at least a 5 ERA. Meanwhile, you've got a Cleveland Guardians team that they had to mix and match with that bullpen on Saturday as well. It's not the same bullpen that we saw a season ago, but Hunter Gaddis, Cade Smith, both of these guys are giving you a sub-3 ERA. Manuel Clase is starting to look a little bit better, and for Gavin Williams, he's a little bit volatile as well. He's been giving you north of 4 walks for 9 innings. Not doing the world's greatest or worst job in terms of strikeout numbers. He's been able to give you a little bit north of 8.5 strikeouts for 9 innings, but I do think that for the Cleveland Guardians, even though they've been rough at home, giving you fewer than 3.8 runs per game, I do think that they get to Conowitz. You've got at the top of the fold Stephen Kwan, who's hitting above a 300. You've had Jose Ramirez hit above a 300. He's been able to spot you with 9 home runs. Kyle Manzardo's not necessarily in for a lot of average, but he's got 10 bombs. And if there's one thing that the Angels have been able to do this season, it's been to hit the deep ball. Now, they are very much an all-or-nothing team, as they don't have a lot of guys that are doing a great job of just being able to find a way on base, as Luis Renifo has been about as useful as a poopy-flavored lollipop to stick with the dodgeball references. He's been hitting about a 225 with 2 home runs this season. That's not great. You've got Taylor Ward, who's been able to fly 16 home runs, but he's hitting for less than a 285 on base. You've had Orace Larrabee a little bit hit or miss for the team as well, but for the Angels, 1.63 home runs per game on the road. That actually leads the American League, so they've been able to have some good production there. Logan Ohapi has been rock solid, so I do think that this total is a little bit too low. Set my total at an 8.9, so whether you got an 8 or an 8.5, I like the over, and I do like the Guardians on the run line. And then this is another very interesting game, as you've got yourself a bunch in the Kansas City Royals who have been playing a whole bunch of unders this year, rocking crisp with Kay Bubich on the mound up against Kadir Montero. Right now with the Royals, about minus 140 on the money line. That total is 8.5. Chris with Kay Bubich, sub 150 ERA, has allowed a grand total of 2 runs in his last 5 starts. And for Kadir Montero, he has given you an ERA that's right around about a 4-5, but bullpen of the Detroit Tigers is in the top 6 in terms of ERA. You've got so many guys like Brand Herder, Will Vest, and company that you're able to mix and match with in the bullpen. for the Royals. They just have not been hitting at home, right around about 3.4 to 3.5 runs per game at home. So it's a low-scoring affair. The Royals have a lesser offense, but I think that Chris with a K. Bubich, he's able to supply a good start, get the job done for the Royals. So I do like the Royals on the money line, and I do like the under. What else I absolutely love is what we've all got coming up here on VSiN on Sunday. Get started with the weekend morning line at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time, 7 o'clock a.m. Pacific Time. Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich. That goes down at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then you'll have a dose of myself on Live Bet Sunday. That'll be coming up at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific, all right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.